Live from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank, the bank that specializes in understanding you. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello again, everyone. Welcome to another edition of North Fulton Business Radio. I'm John Ray, and I just want to give a quick shout out before we get to our guest for the folks over at Renaissance Bank. They have been pretty spectacular during all the PPP issues that have gone around and did a lot of work with non-clients, which a lot of banks did not do that. Some a lot did, but others didn't. Renaissance one that did, and they made a lot of friends. And if you're looking for a more personal experience with your bank, check them out. Go to renaissancebank.com. They've got 200 offices across the South ready to serve you, and you can find your nearest office there on their website. Give them a call. Notice that a real person will answer the phone, not a computer-generated voice, and make an appointment and go see them. And I think you'll be glad you did. I know that from firsthand experience. Renaissance Bank, understanding you, member FDIC. And now I want to welcome Dr. Leon Prieto. And Dr. Prieto is a professor of management at Clayton State University. Dr. Prieto, welcome.
Thank you for having me on, John. This is such a pleasure.
It's a pleasure for me, actually, because I just the source of this interview is talking about your book, which I just finished over the weekend. African American Management History is the name of the book, folks. I strongly encourage that you read it. Go grab it and read it. But before we get to that, tell us a little bit about you and your background and as a management professor there at Clayton State.
Okay. Well, from the accent, I'm originally from Trinidad and Tobago, which is a twin island republic in the Caribbean, not too far geographically from Venezuela. So born and raised there, but I decided to move to the U.S. to attend college, you know, so I went to a historically black college known as Claflin University in a little city known as Orangeburg, South Carolina. And so I went there for undergrad and did my MBA at Georgia Southern University. And then I decided to pursue my doctoral studies, my PhD at LSU. So I'm a big LSU football fan, you know. So we're not doing so good this season, but last season, of course, we were champions. So I'm still enjoying, you know, a little bit of that.
Well, that was a season for the ages. So I think you can coast on that one for a long time, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. I'm still on a high from that season.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I currently work at Clayton State University. I started my career at Savannah State, you know, but I eventually transitioned to Clayton State University. Been there for a little over 8 years now. So I work for our College of Business over at Clayton State. And for those who are not familiar with Clayton State University, we have around 8,000 students. It's a great university, beautiful campus. And I would like to think that, you know, we are doing our part to educate the future small business owners, entrepreneurs, within the Georgia, within the state of Georgia and the Atlanta area. So I think we are doing a pretty good job at Clayton State. Great place to be.
Yeah, I was going to have, let's give a bigger shout out to Clayton State. I know we want to get to your book, but let's do that because I'm glad you mentioned that because a lot of folks, particularly on the northern side of Atlanta, aren't familiar with Clayton State, right? Because of where it's located, they don't know that Clayton State has 8,000 students. That's a pretty good sized campus. And y'all are doing some great work in the business department there in terms of doing some pretty practical education for future business leaders.
I would like to think so. We have great leadership, Dr. Tim Hines. He's the president, and he recently announced he's retiring next year. So that's a huge loss for Clayton State. But, you know, he did great work for almost 10 years, and I'm pretty sure we're going to find another exceptional leader to lead us. You know, we have a great dean of our business school, Dr. Jacob Chaco, and he's doing a really wonderful job. We have fine faculty members, Dr. Joey Hain. You know, she introduced me to you. You know, mm-hmm. She's a wonderful marketing professor at Clayton State University, and we're so happy to have her. And we have a number of great faculty members doing wonderful things as it relates to economic development, coming up with great programs for our local business community. So we're just trying to serve the needs of our constituents within Clayton County and beyond, you know. So a lot of people haven't heard of us, and people say we are a well-kept secret, but who wants to be a secret,
you know? That's right.
You know? So hopefully some of the listeners could, you know, check us out, visit our campus. We have a very beautiful campus, and I'm quite proud of the impact we are making at Clayton State, and we're going to continuously make an impact within the state of Georgia.
That's great. Thank you for that. Let's get to your book. Again, the name of the book is African American Management History, which you co-authored with your wife. So let's shout out to your wife, Dr. Simone Phipps, and congratulations on getting this important work out. Tell us a little bit about your book, maybe the why this topic, why this was important to you and your wife to get this topic covered in a book like this.
Okay. Well, shout out again to Simone Phipps, Dr. Simone Phipps, and she's a professor at Middle Georgia State University in the big city of Macon.
Ah.
You know? Yeah, so she teaches management as well. And the idea for this book, I would say it really started from undergrad. Simone and I, we both attended Claflin University, HBCU, great, great university. And we learned a lot about African American history and things of that nature. But when we were studying business management, we noticed there were a number of things that could have been covered in the textbooks in terms of the contributions made of African Americans and other ethnic groups as well. But they were not present in the book. And I thought that was a little bit strange. I was like, okay, there's an opportunity to expand the knowledge base, you know? So fast forward to doing my PhD, I took a class in management history at LSU, and the same thing came up, you know? So I learned a lot about a lot of pioneering men and women, but not so much about pioneering African Americans. So I decided, since college, you know, I'm going to address this in the literature at some point. So around 5 years ago, Simone and I discovered some thought leadership from an African American pioneer by the name of Charles Clinton Spaulding. And we were blown away by some of his thought leadership. You know, he was a pioneering businessman, African-American, writing these articles for the African-American community on how to manage your businesses effectively. And we were like, bingo, you know, so it's time for us to address this. But we kind of slept on the idea for a little bit until one day I was out shopping for furniture alongside Simone. And we came across this gentleman, and he told me his name was Charles Clinton. He was a salesman at a furniture store. And I was like, Charles Clinton? He's like, yes, he was named after Charles Clinton Spaulding. And I guess I'm a little bit superstitious, so I took that as a sign. Okay, I need to get off my butt and write this book, you know. So so we decided to, you know, work on it not too long after that. And then the rest has been history, you know. So it has been getting a lot of attention, not just in the U.S., but internationally as well. I have colleagues in New Zealand, for crying out loud, utilizing, you know, the book in their classrooms. Colleagues in Cambridge, England, utilizing the book because they have been such a there are a lot of hidden figures, I guess, within the Black community that contributed in a meaningful way that haven't been covered before. And now we are seeing greater recognition for those people's works and contributions. And we could all learn from it today.
For sure. And I want to get into some of those, not just a few of those representative figures, because we can only touch so many, but some of their thought leadership that they offered. But I'm one of the things I'm curious is you, you know, you're not a native to the United States, and the perspective that that gives you, because it's sometimes, you know, I think what we find is that folks that are come to the United States point to things that we need to pay attention to that maybe are right under our own nose, that those of us that grew up here don't recognize. And I wonder if that's really the case for you and your wife in terms of what you've delivered to us here.
I think so. We have a insider outsider perspective.
Yeah.
You know, we are Black, but we were not raised in the United States, you know? So, so we looked at some of the issues facing the Black business community and just the business community in general in the United States with an almost, with a detached eye almost. But we lived here long enough to really understand some of the issues facing these communities and so forth. But the outsider perspective definitely did help because we did see a lot of gaps that were missing, that people who were too close to the issue, I guess, didn't pay attention to, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I also had a deep appreciation for history. I'm a history buff, always into things like trivia and history. And I have to pay my respects to Alex Trebek. He recently passed, you know? So, so I always have a love for history and learning new things and ways we can learn from those experiences of others to progress, you know? So this outsider perspective definitely played a role in, for me and Simone, analyzing some of the gaps within the literature and how we can learn from them to progress as a people.
So let's get into that. And one of the things I would notice, just point people to right off the bat, is the word African here in the title is very important, because one of the things that you talk about in the book are the ways of viewing the world that came from Africa that are really important in terms of the way these business leaders built and ran their businesses.
Yeah, good. Very good question. There's this African philosophy that stem from Southern Africa, like, for example, South Africa. It's known as Ubuntu. And a rough translation of Ubuntu means I am because we are. And Ubuntu represents that overarching philosophy throughout the continent of Africa. You know, so there are different countries that have similar philosophies with different names. So Ubuntu, that's the name in South Africa. In Rwanda, they call it Umuganda. In Kenya, they call it Ujamaa. So it embodies the same thing, this whole spirit of cooperation. So cooperation plays a very active role on the continent. And during the slave trade and slavery, a lot of these traditions did not die in the Middle Passage. You know, it still persisted in the Caribbean, where I'm originally from. Mm-hmm. It still persisted in Latin America, and it still persisted in the United States. So during slavery, these systems of corporation, they still existed, you know. So the enslaved people, they still work together to solve problems facing their community in terms of burying their loved ones. They would pitch in and cooperate to take care of each other's needs. For example, in Trinidad, you know, where I'm from, there's this tradition known as Gayap. So if a neighbor's home was damaged in any way, the community will get together and lend a hand, you know, for no money. You know, we might just get a plate of food or something like that, you know.
Right.
You know, some beers, things of that nature.
Sure.
And that system of cooperation, it's a very big part of people of African descent in many parts of the world. And it's no different here in the United States as well. So a lot of these business leaders, a lot of their businesses got their start in the Black church and various African-American churches where they practice some of these traditions of cooperation, and they all pitched in, generated ideas, pooled funds to launch some of these businesses. And a lot of that spirit of cooperation, it pretty much shaped those companies' business models that stem from the Black church, that stem from a lot of these people who really embody those values. And I see a need for some of these values of cooperation to take place today, especially during this pandemic. Because to rebuild America, we can't do it alone. This individualistic mindset, I think, will hurt us more than help us, you know. So we need to have a more cooperative mindset in order to solve some of these wicked problems facing our society today.
Folks, we're here chatting with Dr. Leon Prieto, and with, along with his wife, Dr. Simone Phipps. He is the author of, the two of them are the author of African-American Management History. One of the things that you talk about in the book, and since you brought up the Black church, you talk a lot about the importance of spirituality. So dig into that just a bit more, and why that was such an important part of African-American management philosophy over the years.
Okay. Well, spirituality plays a central role within many communities, especially the African-American community. And I talked about Ubuntu a little earlier, but I didn't really break it down. So Ubuntu is made up of three components, spirituality being a big part of it. And the other one is dialogue, and then consensus building. But spirituality plays a very central role, right? So so Ubuntu means I am because we are. And it's very important for us small business owners, entrepreneurs, to really embody this spirit of care and community. So spirituality doesn't have to mean religious, but it can be.
Sure.
And a lot of these African American business leaders, they were very strong Christians, and their faith played a very big role in shaping the mission of their organizations, and also the way in which they managed others, you know. But it doesn't have to mean religion today, because in spite of someone's religious beliefs or not, we all need to embody a lot of values related to helping others, being compassionate, showing empathy. And these are all values that transcend religion, and is very important for corporations, large and small, to embody some of these humanistic values that can help us all progress as a people and adequately serve our employees, serve our customers, serve our wider community. So spirituality plays a central role in the history of a lot of these African-American businesses. And I feel as if that a lot of times we tend to run away from some of these spiritual values that can make our companies great. We should not shy away from it. Mm. You know, it should be an essential part of every business's strategy, from our opinion.
Yeah, and I thank you for saying that, because what you're getting at is that business should have a purpose bigger than just the bottom line. That because business accomplishes, well-run businesses accomplish so much more than just producing a bottom line, right?
Exactly. You know, and Simone and I, we feel as if bottom line should be expanded. It shouldn't just be profit. It should also be well-being. Hmm. You know, so usually when people talk about the purpose of a business is always profit, profit, profit. Yes, you know, we are not naive in thinking that profit is not important. It definitely is.
Sure.
But well-being for your employees, your customers, the wider community is also equally important as well as making a profit. And a lot of companies today can learn from that. For example, during this pandemic, we have witnessed small businesses and large businesses alike, some of them engaged in price gouging during this coronavirus pandemic. And it's so sad to see companies strain from their mission and vision to engage in such practices when people were actually suffering and wanted access to PPE and these masks and all these things that could save their lives. So when I see small businesses engaging in price gouging, I was like, you know what? You know, this is them straying from their purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, the purpose of an organization should be to ensure the well-being of their customers, their employees and community, and also to make a profit. It shouldn't just be profit-driven. And when you just focus on profit, you may engage in some of these unethical behaviors that could derail their success in the future, because people are not going to forget.
Sure. And what you point out in the book that I think is really important is that such firms that focus on the greater good, we'll call it, or social entrepreneurship is another term you could use, typically outperform those that don't.
Oh, yes. You know, definitely. You know, so we have a strong belief that small businesses can also be social entrepreneurs and servant leaders within the community. You know, it doesn't just have to be those large corporations, you know. I have a belief that small businesses tend to have a stronger connection with the community, you know, and why not capitalize on that connection and really do your part? I'm not saying to utilize all of your revenues, you know, just for the greater good, but I think we can all do our part, small and large alike, you know, and there are examples of small businesses, local, in the Atlanta area, that given a little. And these things help build a community, and they will engender a lot of trust and continued support, you know, because there are some customers who are passionate about giving to some of these organizations who they see as being authentic, and who they see as being partners within the community, you know. So very important for a lot of these companies to engender that spirit of servant leadership and social entrepreneurship.
Now, there are a number of figures that whose work, life and work, are outlined in the book. One that I want to get to, the one that stood out for me. This is my show, so I'm going to get to that. I want to get to that, that one. We'll talk to, about some other ones, too. But because I did not know her, Maggie Lena Walker. Talk about her and her contribution. What makes her noteworthy? Why we should celebrate her?
Definitely. So, Simone, she'll be very happy about this. Maggie Lena Walker, she was a pioneering African-American business leader. And she was much more than a business leader. You know, she was a social entrepreneur as well. So she is the first African-American woman who chartered and started a bank and served as a president of that bank. And the name of that bank was St. Luke's Penny Savings Bank. Mm. And this bank was founded in the very early 1900s. And it stemmed from an organization she ran known as St. Luke's. And their main purpose was to, you know, help the African-American community in Richmond, Virginia. And she felt that she could do more with this organization. So she started a bank. And the whole purpose was to help the African-American community to save their money and purchase homes and start small businesses. And she was very passionate about women playing their role in the workforce. Because at that time, you know, a lot of women were expected to stay at home and take care of kids. She was not about that at all. She felt women should be equals in terms of going out there and starting their own businesses and getting jobs. And she felt that will actually help marriages instead of hurting a marriage. So she was very pioneering in her thought process along those lines. Mm. Yeah, so she started that bank, and she is credited today as being an exemplary business leader within American history. And she's gaining greater recognition as being the mother of African-American management. So Charles Clinton Spalding, he was recently recognized by Thinkers 50 as exemplary management thinker. So he's now in the Thinkers 50 Hall of Fame. So who knows, maybe in some years, Maggie Lena Walker might get similar recognition based on her contributions. And there are a number of other people writing books about Maggie Lena Walker and her contributions today. So a lot of people are finally recognizing the great work that she did. They even built a statue for her in Richmond, Virginia. Mm. And there's also a school named after her as well. So she's getting greater and greater recognition, and I'm very thankful for that.
That's great. Now, you mentioned Charles Clinton Spalding, speaking to you from the salesperson there, that which I think is a great story. But talk a little bit about him and his contribution, and why we should know more about him too.
Okay, so Charles Clinton Spalding, he was the longtime president of the North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company, which was a company, which is a company that was founded in 1898 and is still in existence today. It's struggling a bit now in contemporary times. So, so the company was started by John Merrick, who was a former enslaved person, and Dr. Aaron McDuffie Moore, who was one of the first, who was the first African American doctor in Durham, North Carolina. So the company was failing, and then they hired Charles Clinton Spalding to turn that company around. And he was a natural salesman. And so from 1900 up until the early 1950s, he managed the North Carolina Mutual, turned it into the most successful African-American business in the early 20th century. And he was as popular as Oprah Winfrey was in the early half of the 20th century. You know, schools were named after him. People were naming their children after him. You know, he was even well known in Africa. He would receive letters from people in Nigeria because they hoped he would sponsor their scholarships and give them jobs. So he was a legendary figure, legendary business person. And what was unique about him was his thought leadership. You know, so he wrote a number of articles giving advice to even his competitors on how to manage a business. So some of his works were in popular newspapers, and he was also covered by the popular press as well. And he was highly respected, not just in the Black community, but also the white community as well. They highly respected Charles Clinton Spaulding. So Simon and I were very pleased that Thinkers 50, which is an organization that recognizes management thought leaders, so people like Clayton Christensen, who recently passed, people mm-hmm. like Michael Porter, you know, they were recognized by the Thinkers 50 Hall of Fame. And so Charles Clinton Spaulding is a recent inductee to the Thinkers 50 Hall of Fame, and we're quite pleased about that. So he's another one of those hidden figures who shouldn't be hidden.
Sure.
You know, based on his contributions.
You know, stepping back just a second, I'm really curious about just the whole notion that I think a lot of business people are, and I've been guilty of this myself, infected by the notion that, you know, we made great progress in terms of our management thought, right? And we do it better than they used to do it in the old days, right? And there's, you know, we want to learn from those around us today, but there's folks in the past, there's not a lot to learn necessarily. And we don't spend enough time in management history generally, much less African-American management history. Talk a little bit about that and some of the really refreshing contemporary ideas that you talk about in the book that we can utilize today and revive today.
Oh, yes, there's a lot we can learn from history. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, I am totally biased because I love history, first and foremost. But a lot of times we tend to focus on the now, but we can reflect on the past to chart a way forward, right? And a lot of management ideas we see is actually old wine in new bottles, if you really think about it, you know. So ideas don't just die, you know, they hang around a bit, but they might be reconfigured and reimagined for contemporary times. But a lot of these figures who we covered in the book, and other figures as well, many of their ideas are so revolutionary, it can still be applied in contemporary times to help us progress as a people. So a lot of times we tend to focus on the new and what's fresh and what's present now. But we do ourselves a grave injustice by not spending the time and reflecting on some of this wisdom. Because growing up as a little boy back in Trinidad, the most important lessons I've learned was from listening to my grandmothers and listening to elders in the community, listening to people who came before me who had a lot of sage advice and sage wisdom to share. And the same thing applies when it comes to management, you know. So the businesses that succeeded in the past are those that had a greater connection with the community and who showed empathy and who were truly servant leaders. And that wisdom, those companies pretty much manifested. We should be very avid listeners to some of these pioneers. We should actually spend time learning how they did things and apply it today, you know, because there's nothing old about connecting with the community and giving back in a meaningful way and looking after the well-being. That's ideas like that will last a lifetime. So we should always embrace history and try not to make the same mistakes that were made in the past.
Folks, we're here chatting with Dr. Leon Prieto and along with his wife, Dr. Simone Phipps. They are the authors of African American Management History. As we wrap up here, I want to make sure we dig into a particular concept that you talk about, and we've addressed it a little bit here in our chat, but this term cooperative advantage, because we're so steeped in the term competitive advantage, and you make a contrast in those two concepts in the book. Talk about cooperative advantage and what that really means.
Oh, yes. You know, in today's society, we focus a lot on competition. And there is some value in that, you know. There is some value in being competitive. But we should focus on separating ourselves from our competition by focusing on some of the values that stem from Ubuntu, you know, a spirit of care and community, dialogue and consensus building. So we define cooperative advantage as the benefits that companies can possess and accrue due to its people-centered approach, you know, to consensus building, spirituality, and dialogue. You know, so it's a very people-centered approach to management. And a lot of times, if we're too focused on competition, we will lose sight of our employees, our customers, the community, and all of the stakeholders, because we are so laser focused on destroying the competitors. And there are many cases of companies today overworking their employees, some of them working for substandard salaries, and a lack of care for the community, because you just focus on blowing the competition out of water. So it's just a way to reimagine the true purpose of companies today, small and large, focusing on cooperation and well-being. And a big part of it is having a more compassionate approach to capitalism. Because capitalism at times can appear soulless and too individualistic. So it's time to bring a soul in capitalism, embody some of these principles of Ubuntu, have a greater focus on spirituality, really try to get to know your customers, you know, via dialogue, get to know your community, try to build consensus, generate ideas from your customers and the community as well to help with your service or your products, you know. And so it's very important for us in this new era. Hopefully we'll be living in the post-pandemic era soon. And there's a tremendous opportunity for us to reimagine what we want this world to be by focusing on gaining a cooperative advantage.
And just to emphasize here, I mean, this is not some binary dichotomy here, if you will. I mean, this is not some either or kind of thing. And I think we're such in such a tribal world now that people think it's got to be either be one or the other. Talking about a cooperative advantage does not mean ignoring the bottom line. It means incorporating a lot of other concepts and into your practice as a business leader beyond just the bottom line. And I think that's important to say. Again, we've said it once, but let's say it again.
Definitely. And also, you know, so let's not be naive. Of course, you know, competition is something we have to focus on to a certain degree. But let's not make that the panacea to solving all problems, you know. So we can separate ourselves as a company based on how much you focus on the well-being of the employees and the community and how well you serve your customers. And there are a number of these lists with the most respected companies. And those companies that make those lists are usually the one that embody some of these values we are talking about. You know, the employees sing praises about them based on how well they treat them, how well they serve the community. So a way to really separate yourself from your competitors is to actually be a good servant leader, be a social entrepreneur, and a company that embody these principles of cooperation.
Dr. Leon Prieto, this has been awesome. What a pleasure to have you. And thanks so much to you and your wife for writing this book. I highly recommend it a lot there. It's too rich for us to get into everything that's there in just the short time we have together. But for those that would like to know more, would like to be in touch with you get your book, tell them how they can do that.
Well, first and foremost, thanks for inviting me to have this discussion with you and your audience. So this has been an absolute pleasure. And the book can be purchased on Amazon. So just type in African-American Management History, Insights on Gaining a Cooperative Advantage. It's readily available on Amazon. Feel free to reach out to me on Twitter and LinkedIn, you know, Leon C. Prieto. I'll be happy to talk to you.
Awesome. Dr. Leon Prieto, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, John.
And folks, just a note, we'll have links in the show page as well, so you can go there if you're want to check out our website. Just a quick reminder before we take off here, if you've got some problems with your business that involve administrative tasks or bookkeeping, maybe you've got some marketing issues that you need to solve. Well, I've got an answer for you that involves picking up the phone and calling Essie Escobedo over at Office Angels. Now, Essie has been in this business for 20 years. She's a true, talking about a servant leader, she's a servant leader. She's been tremendous in terms of particularly bringing women up in their business, and also empowering the women that work with her. So if you're interested in working with an organization like that, here's what happens. You call her up at 770-442-9246. Explain the problem that you have. And that problem usually means you're working on more than you ought to be working on in your business, and you need to outsource some of those tasks. And that's what she helps you with. And she sends in angels virtually that fly in, get the job done, and fly out. And they work on an ongoing or as-needed basis. Whatever you need, that's what they'll do. So give her a call or go to officeangels.us if you're timid and just want to check it out. But just give her a call. You'll be glad you did. And I work with her and my business, and she's tremendous. Folks, just another little wrap-up here. We are on all the major podcast apps. You can find us by using the search term North Fulton Business Radio, and find us on any app you want to talk about. What we would really appreciate is if you would go to your favorite app and give us a great review, give us a 5-star review. And the reason is not because of us, it's because it helps people find the show so they can find our guest, because it's about our guest and about the great work that they do, like Dr. Prieto and the other 300 plus guests that we've had over the last 4+ years. If you could do that for us, we'd appreciate it. We'd also appreciate it if you would find us and follow us on social media, North Fulton BRX. We're on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. So for my guest, Dr. Leon Prieto, I'm John Ray. Join us next time here on North Fulton Business Radio.